Blog Talk Radio.
Can you imagine a place where all the trials and tribulations of the world don't exist? It's a real place. Right now, it only exists in man's mind because the reality of it is that until the time comes for you to get there, you need only picture it. So what I want to do is try to give you a sneak preview of it, my perception.
Wise and see the whole world In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, the one God to whom all praise is due, the Lord of the world, and in the name of his last and greatest messenger, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and their divine reminder in our midst, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, I greet my panel and our listening audience with the greeting words of peace and paradise. We say it in the Arabic language. As-salamu alaykum, and welcome to this week's edition of Young, Gifted, and Black. This is for the Kareem in Muhammad, also known as Kareem the Communicator. And I will be co-hosting this week with our beloved Queen, Aziza Miriam Muhammad. Are you there?
Yes, sir. As-salamu alaykum, sir.
Wa alaykum as-salam. Okay, go ahead.
I was trying to get Wayne on the phone, and I don't know what happened, but he has the call-in number, and I've called him a couple of times. So maybe you want to call him. I don't know. He knows that he's supposed to be on, so I don't know what happened to him. But we have Kurt McMasters with us, and tonight we're talking about poetry in motion, which poetry is still a very important part of our African culture, and I think it's the origin of rap music personally. That's just my opinion. Don't quote me on that, but it's just my personal opinion. And so I wanted the listening audience, as well as our distinguished panel, Mr. Kurt McMasters, to share their poetry with us tonight. So we're not going to hold up any longer, so we're going to have Mr. McMasters introduce himself and tell us a little bit about himself and tell us a little bit about his poetry.
Thank you for having me on. I don't necessarily do poetry in its written form. I do it in more of a written style. I guess it has a poetic fervor to my message. But whether you're doing poetry or whatever you're doing in the movement, it's pretty much the same. We all are trying to reach the same ends and aims. I do believe that poetry is the beginning, as you said, of rap music, because poetry spoke to the hurt of the downtrodden and the denizens of our society in every inner city in America. And poetry emerged as a way for us to express. I mean, African Americans have always been rapping. I mean, there's rhythm in the way we speak, the way we walk, the way we talk. You know, so it was quite natural that it would segue into an art form and be formally announced as rap music. But I am of the old school, and I'm of the school of thought that rap music has to remain pure. It has to maintain its origin, and that was a revolutionary fervor and what brought forth the art itself, which was the pain that African Americans endured, economic struggles, and you know the social stratifications that caused it to even come existence, to even give it life, to even give it relevance. But I think it's a very valuable tool. But it's like all valuable tools that African Americans have fostered and brought forth to heal ourselves. At this particular point, it's been taken over, corporatized, and used for different aims than what it was originally intended.
Yes, sir. I believe that. So how do you think the music industry has taken poetry or lyrics, what I call the lyrical artists, how have they taken it out of context when it comes to our culture? Because it seems to me that culture is being shaped by another entity. What is your opinion on that?
Yes, you're correct in saying that. You're very correct in saying that. It's very insightful to point that out. If you look at what's been coming out of the rap industry now with the the keepers of the flame. Like, I just read an article the other day with Scarface of the 80s group The Ghetto Boys. And even he was talking about how rap music has been co-opted, and it has now became turned into pop, and it's also in the hands of people who don't share what the music was about. They don't share the direction the music was about, and it's strictly based on a profiteering. And it's been used against us. They've taken and turned what we use to express our pain and turned it into a weapon. Because African Americans and Africans in general, across the whole continent, we respond very well to music. Music is the healing, the medicine for our soul. So what they did was they took it over. And they changed it. They changed the dynamics. You're correct in saying that. They changed the direction. Because, excuse me, if you let rap music do what it was designed to do, then that will that would take down some of the other ways and means in which they are controlling our people. Well, rap music was originally, and poetry was written to set us free. And it's been used now to keep us in bondage in ways that I'm sure the originators of this rap culture would have not even intended.
Okay, so I'm going to let Brother Kareem, do you have any questions for Kurt?
Actually, I do. And we're going to have another guest in just a moment. But brother, brother Kurt, is that okay for, I'll call you Brother Kurt?
Yes, that's fine.
Yes, sir. Brother Kurt, my question would be this. In your particular expression of your art, what are some of the main things that inspire you?
I'm inspired by the hurting of my people. I'm inspired by the divisiveness that's become commonplace amongst our people, and I use different mediums to not only heal and deal with the pain that I feel for my people, but also to help others therapeutically digest and work out those pains to death, and also, but I'm inspired for the same reason, the same ways that all African American artists are in our particular vein, and that is from the suffering around us and the inequities that we face as a people and as a nation.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. Well, at this particular point in time, a very, very good brother of mine is on the line. That's Brother Aha. Are you there, Brother Aha?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Yes, sir. Okay. If you would just briefly introduce yourself, sir, and let them know a little bit about something about you and your art.
Hi. This is Wayne Gooden, also known as The Elder. And I'm a motivational speaker and also a poet.
I'm Aha from Bianchi.
Okay, we're glad to have you with us, Brother Wayne. But if you would, just give us just a moment. Brother Aha, are you still there?
Matter of fact, I'm not home right now. I'm going to be home in a few moments. So if you can call me in about 7 minutes.
Is that you, Brother Aha?
No, sir. No, that's Brother Wayne.
That's Brother Wayne. Okay, you said call you in 7 minutes?
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you, brother.
You're welcome.
Okay, excuse me, Brother Aha, forgive me for that interruption, brother. So if you would, like I said, introduce yourself, brother, and just briefly, tell us a little bit about you and your art.
That was an interesting. That was Brother Wayne. He had to let us know that he was going to be on in 7 minutes. That's all. We're waiting on
him. Huh? I'm sorry?
St. Louis, right?
Yes.
Yes, Brother Aha is from here, right here in St. Louis, Missouri. Yes, he is. He, like I say, he's a very good brother, man. I mean, he's a very dynamic brother. He, again, is an individual. I know him from what I know of him. He's an individual that loves our people and is actively involved in all ways striving to uplift us as a people.
Thank you for that. I'm just one of the tools that the universe uses. I'm one of the tools that Allah uses, one of the tools that all the masters, all the deities use to come through and try to bring our people some peaceful mindsets and also walk them in such a way to where we truly begin to free ourselves. And from going through to doing poetry is one of the biggest things that helps me show that to the people. But it's just... is you, when you walk in what you walk and you walk in what you talk, the people will sit back and appreciate what you give. And through the sound of the poetry, that's just one of the ways for me to show the respect.
Thank you.
Back. Me giving back, really. Because it's not my energy that I'm giving. It's the energy of the universe. It's the all that's just through me. Is channel. So,
yeah.
Building for the people and building with the people, that's what we have to do. You know,
yes, sir.
Giving the people
yes,
what they need so they can need what you give them. That's what we were taught.
Cool. All right. That's right. Praise be to Allah. Brother Kurt.
All praise be to Allah.
Okay.
All praise.
Yes, sir. Now, I don't necessarily have another question for you. However, from the way you describe how you do your art, could you share something with us? Just real quick.
Well, like I said, I don't per se write poetry, but I do have a kind of a poetry flow. But I'm more of a motivational speaker. But I will share some of my things with you. Bear with me one moment.
Yes, sir.
An appropriate. And this is something I wrote earlier in response to the story that came out about a young brother who was trying to get his master's, and he was one of its professors, in fact, was giving him a failing grade because he refused to recite a racist song. And I was just moved to react to that. And my response to that article, I became very passionate about it because I felt that the brother should have not been giving a failing grade simply because he refused to insult himself in such a way. And I begin by saying, reading it, when are black people going to learn we need our own schools, our own grocery stores, our own everything? You know, what really gets me is most intellectual whites know history, and therefore they know every god or goddess, being false or real, came from black civilization. Take, for instance, the European white false god Odin. He is just the personification of Nimrod, the king of Babylon, who was black. So in knowing history, as intellectual whites do, then why would they remain racist? Moreover, seeing that all whites and the whole Europe are the benefactors of our people's folklore and mystery religions. Furthermore, even Europe was named after a black goddess named Europa, and she was the personification of the queen mother. She was the wife and queen of Nimrod, and she was also black. The Bible gives us the answer to this question that we herein have asked, and that is, what can make whites who are highly educated be so racist, even though they know that all things on the earth was done and all knowledge was given by people of color. So one has to remember what we learn, what we learn in college ourselves, and that's the fact that according to history, the white nations were bringing up the rear when it came to human advancement. Whites didn't start to catch up until the last few centuries during the Age of Reason and Enlightenment. We can even go back to Alexandria, where a lot of the world's knowledge was stored in Alexandria, which was built as the result of Alexander the Great's murderous empire building. Alexander conquered many people and lands and gathered the knowledge of those people together and centralized it in Alexandria. The Greeks and the Romans, by their own account, openly admitted that they received most of their knowledge from Egypt, which by now I'm sure everyone has cast off the lies of German philosophers like Hegel, Kant, Dawson, and his twisted cousin Darwin, who helped create these silly notions of white supremacy, of which there are many. The philosopher Greg William Frederick Hegel even went so far as to try to separate Egypt from Africa by creating a term known as Egypt proper. Now let us conclude this lesson by giving the answer to the question, why professional, intelligent educators and men of letter would propagate racism and white supremacy? Furthermore, even when the historical record, which is written in their own hands, firmly states otherwise, the answer to the affirmation question is simply stated in the biblical context. And the Bible tells us that these white supremacist ideologies are not really about race at all. Moreover, but are just tools to divide the people. We are not all in this miserable condition merely as a condition of our respective racial and cultural identifications. This is all really happening because the spiritual wicked men who happen to be white handing down these separatist doctrines to other evil men for the sinister purpose of destabilizing and keeping off balance the entire world. Moreover, one will find that accompanying these white supremacist doctrines and ideologies, is another biblically explained reason for them. Another reason for these such doctrines is plain old childish jealousy of the people of color. Period. So that was my response to hearing of that story and people asking the question. You know, people calling me and asking me the question and people sending me messages on Facebook, you know, to help them get their head around why are we still dealing with these kind of issues in our universities. And plainly, we're going to continue to deal with these kind of issues until we understand that only our people can heal themselves. Until we realize that we must come back inward, not outward, and heal each other, you know, and to give to each other and build our own infrastructure and our own nation and to separate ourselves from the ideologies of capitalism and usury that we've been so accustomed to in America.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Wow, that was brilliant. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brother Kareem.
No, I was actually getting ready to ask you if you had anything to say about that before I brought Brother Aha to the front.
Well, yeah, I wanted to know, what did you experience or what have you studied to come up with that synopsis of the state of our people?
I've run the gambit of all the books and novels and research after by black scholars, James Cone and others, you know, and I've been doing what most brothers have been doing. I was searching for answers, and I needed to understand the world beyond the view that we simply suffered simply because we were black, and that is just not enough for us to be in these kind of dire situation. So through my own personal search for answers, I began to realize that we were not suffering simply because we were the lowest, but we were suffering because we were the greatest. And when you get into that vein, the avenues you take searching for knowledge will take you to places you've never known. I mean, when I first, like, when I opened that Pandora's box and that knowledge flooded into me, I was almost ashamed that I didn't know it already. I was like, my God, here it is, sure it is. This is exactly what, and like light flashing in the darkness, it became very clear to me what our suffering was about. And that's what put me on the path to personalizing this information and putting it in the packaging it so that I could teach my other brothers who may not have been, and sisters who maybe not have been so far along in their search.
Okay, so do you think that, well, I'll put it like this, how much of white supremacy you think plays into to our mindset of putting us in the condition that we're in today?
That's a very good question. Thank you for asking. It plays, it dominates our lives. We have to know the rules of living around whites better than they have to know them. We've got to know what's expected of us better than they have to know them. Because they have the luxury of not having to care about how to interact with black people. You know, when you're on top of the pyramid, then you set the rules. So everyone has to adjust to you. You don't have to adjust to them. So it dominates our lives to the point that, you know, we think about what we say in their company. It could be just a total conversation that was really, you know, vague and, you know, mundane, but we're still aware of the conversation, how it's going to affect those whites who are around us. For example, if you're in a restaurant, most people who have got their conscious community, they don't speak consciously in restaurants where white people are there. You got to come to a brother like me. I speak like this all the time. And, if I'm in a restaurant and whites are there, I find, and my friends laugh at, because we find them bending their ear. They're in awe that, for one, an African-American could speak so articulately and actually know what he's speaking about, and to even have the audacity to speak on these things, which they themselves know is true. So when you have a system that causes you to think first before you open your mouth, you're totally dominated, and I'm sure you can relate to that. All of us at some point in time have thought about what we're about to say when we're in the company of Caucasians, and that is the supreme evidence that when you have to think and consider those sitting around you before you speak the truth, which is written historically, which is written down even by their own author, then you know you're being dominated psychologically by white supremacy.
Yes, sir. Okay. All right, well, I don't have any more questions, Brother Kareem. You have any right now?
No, I don't. Absolutely. Absolutely not. I mean, brothers has carried has acquitted himself very well.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And Brother Aha.
Yes.
Are you
okay?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Yes, sir. Well, yes, sir. But I mean, for me, pretty much it's the same question. I mean, if you have something that you could, you know, just a little something you could share with us right now out of your heart.
Yeah. As the days turn and the wheels of life spin, when people start paying attention, coming from within, or where they search the realms outside to see a greater space, to overstand what's coming out right in front of their face. Watch the world unfold, the stories of old being told, lived out by man and woman. Once again, most of our people are sleeping while the universe is creeping. Time is passing you by. They're wondering why. Most of the things we were taught were lies. Santa Claus didn't exist. Supremacy, they suppressed our minds. We ain't got to call it a color because it was white and blackness. We brought them in our land, let them in our home. We forgot that we did that to ourselves. Now look what's wrong. But what, we grown. Mistakes are sold. we're sowing new seeds, new stories being told, like the days of old. That's it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Right. All right. And, Brother Aha, I want to ask you this. You know, now, just like our brother Kirk was talking about, I wanted to put this question to you. I mean, what do you see as one of the main reasons why we still continue to look to white folks, the slave master, whatever label we want to put on them? Ultimately, they've shown themselves to be our enemy. Why do we keep looking to them to train us and educate us?
It was beaten to us. And we still haven't healed from that beating. If I take your impregnated wife and hang her from a tree and cut that baby out of her belly and make you stand there and watch, and I do that for 150 years, you're going to do whatever I tell you. I guarantee. Because that's what they did to us. Stomp on that baby head. Stomp on the child's head. It was brutal. And we still live with that fear. It's ingrained in us genetically. It made you run afraid. And that was passed down through generations. Genetically, so it's bred into us, and we haven't gotten over that, even though we should.
Yes.
You use that energy. You know, you turn that completely over.
Yes. And I would like to, if you don't mind, I would like to, you know, speak on that also, if that's okay.
Go right ahead, bro. That's what this forum is for.
Yeah. What we have to understand, like the brother said, is the principal reason why we keep going back to white society for the answers, because they did one important thing when conquering a people. The first thing you must do is you must show that the women, that the warriors that they rely on, cannot protect us. And that's important. And then the children will realize, the warriors that we rely on, the males that we rely on for our protection, can't protect us from this enemy. So you got to look at what they did. They openly abused and whipped and made powerless the African American male during slavery time. And they openly abused, chastised, and emasculated the African American male in front of the women, in front of the children. So after years of showing the very people that you're supposed to be protecting, that you can protect them, that here is an enemy that we can't vanquish, it ingrains and instills in the rest of the culture and the rest of the people that you're going to always, the only way to deal with the white culture, with the white man, is you're going to have to do it in a way that is not combative, do it in a way that is not direct all-out war, do it in a way that you can retain your life. So we had to gain those skills to say, well, you know, we can't rely on our warriors to protect us, so we've got to find other ways to do. So the only way you could do was to bow down, was to go to him in a begging kind of circumstance. Because if you didn't, then you were risking your life. And I don't think we risked our life enough during that particular time. Because had we said, well, no matter what you're going to do, you would not subjugate us, we'll die first, and you won't have any slaves at all. And if our women and our children back in those times saw that, hey, these brothers, these warriors would rather die in our protection than to live under his rule, we would not be under these kind of circumstances that we are. But we taught, because we did not resist more than we did with our lives, that it set a precedent that now we feel like hey, if our warriors, from the men who come from Africa, and they've still been to Africa, these were feared men. But I've come over here, their strength is nothing at all compared to the powers of the white man. If that kind of ideology was not passed along, we would have not be doing what we're doing now, which is going to the white man for our sustenance.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you. And I believe we have Brother Wayne Gooden, Elder X, on the line with us now.
Yes, sir. Yes, you do. Good evening,
yes,
to everyone, and blessings to all.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Queen. How are you? Good evening, King. How are you? How is everyone tonight?
Fine, my brother.
Everyone is well, sir. Why don't you introduce yourself and let us know who you are?
My name is Wayne Gooden. That's my government name. I've been called Elder, not in the church terminology, but some younger brothers call me Elder because of the poetry I do. And I just added the X because of my unknown origin of my African ancestry. And I'm a poet. I do Black Conscience, and I'm also a motivational speaker.
Okay. And so what is it that you have to share with us tonight?
What I'm going to share is actually a collaboration. It is on my Facebook page, and it's a three-part collaboration, but I'm going to only share my part of it. And it's called When the Mirrors Reflect the Shame. And their names are graphed on brick. Okay, and I will begin. And their names are graphed on brick walls of memorials to ghetto fame, with bodega candles lit as block screen and blaze. Their mothers pass the sights and grieve as another mother's son shall be shot to death on these hard-knock streets over senseless beef of just being in the place they should not be. The asphalt square tile spuns the blood of lies murdered senselessly, and should these asphalt square tiles ever speak, they would tell the real-life tales of a Black African-American's grief, abuse, addictions, homelessness, and the reason why this is the domain of the Grim Reaper, seeing his image when the mirrors reflect the shame. To see the morning sky of blue, wars fought overseas when our asphalt block concrete streets remained the war zone, not safe in homes where doors are quadruple locked, not safe in stores where merchants steal their products locked behind their plastic partitions and gates locked. We fight for squares the diameter of a street block, and not one resident that lives there owns a single lot. And for decades, how many other ethnic races were and are our landlords, sponging our rents to live where the rich and the so-called restricted areas are? There you might find two or one of us. We live where shaving razors are hid under tongues and teens become Picasso sculptures, leaving ear to chin buck 50 marks, lacing the face of our puberty young, and just for fun, making facial disconfigurations out of an innocent bystander. You have to live in it to understand the self-preservation, for where we from is survival of the fittest, with or without the gun, when the mirrors reflect the shame. Imprisoned in prisons, without being in prison, so therefore release from prison is returning back to prison without ever venturing outside the city limits, physically or mentally transported through education and the study of the wicked methods of the oppressor. Generation to generations of Black Africans in the United States of America bear witness to the oppressive, depressing states of affairs where depression and recession is ever present, past and present, and even a Black president will not be able to make a dent in this vicious cycle which he's planted in the minds of the people on the first slave plantation. Spiritual building one's conscience with God and reinstilling moral fiber into the souls and heartbeat of our community overcomes the wicked ones. They have advanced their trichnology, and we have advanced our progressive revolutionary tactics and movements. We had to take to the streets philosophy that gangsters move in silence. And every Black man, child, and elder for the real gangsters and overcomers of plan and organized strategies to kill every one of us on all planes of human existence. For quiet as is kept, there are unseen mirrors that reflect the coming of a black planet. The outcome is destined to be positive as we have lived when the mirrors progress. And that's that piece.
Wow, that was nice. That was nice. What is the motivation behind that?
The motivation behind that is just being born in this country, which I call the United States of America, being a black man and the experiences that I went through in this society. Once I began to investigate knowledge of self and knowledge of where I came from, because I was once a victim of the traps that set up for us. But, you know, God was so benevolent with his mercy that he allowed me by grace to come out of that. And then I investigated who I am and my black identity. So the motivation when I do poems, I always reflect on the experiences that I went through and the experience that our people go through now. And I try to enlighten you on the traps that set up for us, even to the point of the food we eat, the stuff we watch on TV, the information that we're fed, which is not true, his story, not our story. You know, if we don't know where we came from, we won't have no idea where we're going.
And so how do you think that has affected the arts in particularly when we look at our children and we look at our art in our original culture versus what is being portrayed today?
The power of propaganda and media is a powerful weapon. I mean, Adolf Hitler used it. He was a master strategist in that area. And what's happening is we don't control what we hear and what we hear. We become victims of what we control and what we hear and what we hear.
Okay, wait a minute. If you have your computers on, please mute your computers because we're getting feedback.
Okay, I think it's somebody else because I'm not on. Okay, but anyway, if we don't control what we hear and what we see, the people or the powers that think they be that do control what we hear and what we see, that's the main weapon for them to utilize how we respond, because if faith comes by hearing the word, then what faith are we building on and what we see and what we hear? So the propaganda is to show the negative stereotypes of the black person. Once this is fed into their spirit, subconsciously, they will come to manifest that in their lives, especially if they don't know the positive aspects of their race, of our race, and of our origin. And just what we are to civilization, because we are the original, we are the original of all races and all and of everything. So therefore, that's why it's important to bring knowledge to our people, knowledge of self, knowledge of God. You know, just we have to uplift. I think that we're going to get there through evolution of the mind, of the conscience, evolution of the spirit. And what's going on today is the exact opposite of that. What's going on today is the constant bombardment of negative images and stereotypes to the point where, you know, I've seen it in my own community where young children are actually acting out what they see in the movies and the portrayal of us on television, which some of us refer to as the stupid tube. And since it's not monitored, it's not monitored by the parents, so all this is fed into them from the time that they watch TV. So when they become teenagers and adolescents, they're only fulfilling the faith, which comes by hearing the word and also by sight, that has been embedded into their subconscious.
Yes, sir. And how does that play into the gun violence and just the violence in the black community altogether, you know, how does that fit in. When we talk about the artistry, you know, when we talk about, you know, actors, film, music, you know, because a lot of people say, well, music doesn't influence, television doesn't influence. It's all about how you raise your children. But if the parents are sitting in front of the TV being influenced and the children are sitting in front of the TV being influenced, to me, it only would seem normal that everybody is dysfunctional.
Exactly. If the parent, this is how I believe that we break the cycle. Once the parent is knowledgeable about self, knowledgeable about their origins, then their conscience is going to be so uplifted, they will monitor what they hear and what they see, not only for themselves, but for their children. And once they learn and understand how the media and the propaganda, that's music, that's every form of communication, is used as one of the most potent tools to keep us in bondage. And once they realize that, then they will monitor it. So therefore, we have to break this generational cycle of accepting ourselves as we are perceived by the powers that think they be, because God is your almighty power. But the powers that think they be, and stop feeding this into our brain. Of course music affects the psyche of the individual. Of course music affects the psyche of individual spirit. Of course what you see, the visual images on movies and television shows, affects the psyche of the individual if they don't know any better. And then you compound that with the fact that when they open out the door, open up their door in an impoverished neighborhood, what they're seeing on TV is what they see when they open their door. So that even makes it even worse. So, I mean, that's how I see it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to yield to the distinguished gentleman from St. Louis, Brother Kareem, and let him ask you some questions right now.
Okay, sister.
And the thought came to mind because our show tonight is Poetry in Motion, and this is actually a question that I have for all the panel members, but we'll start with you first. Is it all right if I call you Elder X?
Yes, please do.
Yes, sir. And first I wanted to come with, because like I said, the title of the show is Poetry in Motion. And Merriam-Webster defines poetry as writing, notice that, writing that formulates a concentrated, imaginative awareness of experience in language, chosen and arranged to create a specific emotional response through meaning, sound, and rhythm. Also that you know that poetry doesn't necessarily have to rhyme, but usually, even if it doesn't rhyme, it has a rhythm. And with that as the base, the thing is this, with that definition and these words, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. With that as the base, my question is, just how effective are we as positive individuals being in producing that specific emotional response of a positive nature?
I tell you, I love that definition because poetry does not have to rhyme. And I really believe as a rhythmic or a rhythm-based people, even when we don't speak, we talk poetry. When we walk, the way we everything we do is a motion. What we put in the universe comes back to us. What we want to do is breathe life. We want to be positive in our mannerism, positiveness in our speech, and that's the greatest example besides the giving and sharing of knowledge. knowledge has no power unless the individual that's speaking the knowledge is exemplifying it within their own life, within their own personal relationship with the Creator, and their own personal relationship with their brethren, and their own personal relationship with the world on a whole. So, this show, let me just stop right now and just say that this show is so beneficial to me personally because, you know, there's power in numbers. And if we unify and do this right now, like this is sending, this show right now is sending out positive vibes, it's sending out positive information. It's so essential. This program is very important to all who are in earshot of it right now.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right. Same question to you, Brother Kirk.
Okay. Could you repeat the question for me? I was listening to the brother in the comment. Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, could you repeat the question for me? I was listening.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, the question is this.
Yes.
In relation to the definition of Merriam-Webster given for poetry, which is writing that formulates a concentrated imaginative awareness of experience in language chosen and arranged to create a specific emotional response through meaning, sound, and rhythm, that in conjunction with the statement we are given, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. How effective are we as quote-unquote positive individuals in actually making that a fact, making that truth?
Well, what must be first understood is the Word coming out of your mouth is the creative principle. We must understand that words were meant from the beginning to have power, because us coming from a God who made us by word and by taking thought, then our words are the sounding board, is the creative principle. We speak into the world that which we allow to come off our tongue. So how you use those powers. I remember a scripture that says the power of life and death is in the tongue. So you decide how you're going to what kind of powers and forces you're going to unleash out of your mouth. And another passage in the Bible where God says, "For I shall manifest the fruits of your lips." So whatever God is saying, I'm giving you, in essence, the same powers I have. Whatever you speak, I shall cause to come to fruition. So if we speak positively, if we speak into our souls, to our spirit, into the ears of our people, they themselves will begin to manifest positive vibes. That's why we've got to take this back. That's why we've got to take back the art form, the key to the black people's ears, and that's poetry and music. Black people, we were born living in based on music and rhythm. It's in everything we do. We can't help it. So to render that kind of effect null and void would be almost impossible. But we must take it back. We must be the keepers of the thing that inundates our minds with whatever message that we choose to ride upon rhythm. The mind opens up when it hears rhythm. And that's what rap music does, or poetry does. The rhythm, it's not just the word. When a person does poetry, the rhythm is the key to opening that space in our minds that says, okay, receive. Now, once that key been put in, then what the words are just the creative principle, but it's the rhythm that opens the door. Even under the sound of my voice, the African Americans who are listening now are listening to the rhythm of my tones. There's rhythm in the way we speak. The rhythm, for rhythm to happen, doesn't necessarily have to rhyme. It is. It's the spiritual forces. They ride upon those rhythms, those beats, those Afro beats, and those words are just the creative part of it. So we've got to keep a hold of that. We can't allow those people who would impart words to us is going to be non-beneficial and destructive to our people.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you. So I would imagine that's what Rakim was talking about when he say let the rhythm hit him.
That's right.
There you go, brother. All right, brother.
I'm still with you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And the same question to you, brother. Do I need to repeat or?
To piggyback off what the brother said, because he brought up a good point about the rhythm and how we're born in the rhythm of the people, and it's in us, and we're not vibrating on our normal tone. We're not in rhythm. That's one of the biggest flaws that I'm glad somebody pointed out, because we need that. Our heartbeat is the drum. The drum is the sound of the universe. We're not on our rhythm. In the beginning, it was word. We are that word, because you and God are one and the same. We separate ourselves, and that's what's throwing us off rhythm. If you look into the scripture, Psalms 82 tells you, ye are gods, children of the Most High God, live as princes, die as mortal men. But you are a God. It tells you that. It tells you three different times in three different books. So that's don't separate yourself. That's why you're with them. When you're walking through the garden in the cool of the day, you got feet when you walk, and you have to have rhythm. We've separated ourselves from what we are. When you look in that mirror, you see what you are. You're created in the image and likeness. That's your physical. Go look in the mirror. That's the image. That's the likeness. That crown of woolly hair. That dark burnt skin. Feet like brass. Finally burnt in the furnace. We've separated ourselves from the fact that we're looking for what we are. You're looking up in the skies, and it's right in your face. We're off rhythm because we've been taught to be off rhythm. That's why we're at the bottom. And not at the top. That came through the, if you want, white supremacy, the suppression of our knowledge. But you got to go deeper than white supremacy and look at the black supremacy that let the white supremacy in, point the finger at self. Because if you didn't let them in the door, it wouldn't be there. So you allowed yourself to be suppressed. So we have to reconnect, get back into the tone and the rhythm that we are. And if you're going to use the scriptures, go through all of them and put the pieces together, because it's a puzzle that's not taught to the people. You have to walk through the troubles of those that came to teach the people. It's more than one school. When you stick yourself in one school, because you are the word was separated. So go through the different schools that the word was separated into to put the full picture together and get back on our rhythm as a people with the drum, with the heartbeat of the planet. We separate ourselves from which we are, God in the flesh, and it tells you that. Jesus tells you in the Bible, doesn't I say in your laws are ye all gods? He said it.
Yes, sir.
When you have to sit back and realize what you are, to get back in tune and get into that rhythm and walk as you are. It's not I'm God, everybody. It's an energy. And we're not as the drum is. We're not on beat. We haven't tuned in because we're too busy letting people tell us instead of sit back, read, pay attention, and actually put it into action what you've just been taught. Go through the schools. The same thing that you'll get in the Bible, you'll get in the Quran. Quran is just a different book, a different discipline, but you get the same stories. Abraham is Ibrahim. Mary is Mary. He says Jesus. It's a whole sort of dedicated to his mother and tells you why she was chosen, what tribe she comes from. That's not even taught by King James in his version. But our people stay separated because we don't want to go through the schools because we look at it as, I don't want to change my culture. It's not your culture that you're changing. That's the school. Your culture is you. We've never lost our culture. We don't realize that our culture is us. You are your culture. What do you do? How do you define self? Because self defines culture first because it's you. You're an individual in a whole pot of individuals. But culture is defined from you first. That's the word manifested, you being the word. It's what do you do with it once you get it? How do you move with it?
Oh,
yes,
well,
sir.
Yes.
You have it.
Powerful.
All praise is due to Allah. Well, Queen.
I'm to Allah. Yes.
Queen Aziza.
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry. I was trying to unmute my phone. I'm losing my voice. But this is what I want to ask all the gentlemen on the panel, because we do have a panel of gentlemen here. I want to ask you, when you look at the black woman today, just the average black woman, what is it that you see and what is it that you wish you saw? And I'm going to start with you, Kurt.
I would say when it comes to the singular body, you know, because we're together, the black woman, the black man make up the whole body, but the singular, we look at it in singular terms, the black woman today, the average. My prognosis is dismal. I would have to say that they have turned her into a commodity to be bought and sold. They turned a black woman into just a function of materialism to promote or to demote. They've used her for all kind of things. You know, they've lampooned her, and trying to get them, the young sisters to see, the average young sister to see, that this is not what you were intended for. I think the greatest work has been done on our women, because our women now, take for instance your average young lady you see. The average young lady is not interested in young men of intellectual prowess. They're just not. A lot of them don't want to hear it. It doesn't fit into the world. They don't understand it. It's something that they cannot digest. And to simplify it, they're just not interested. And I don't know what that sound is, but they're not interested in our people. They don't have a social conscience anymore when it comes to. There's a sound moving around in my ear. I don't know what that is, but they're not interested in the movement, and they're not interested in what we're doing. They, you know, if you talk to the Arab sister about, hey, what are your thoughts on any social movement? What's your thoughts on the social climate? have very little to say, very little contribution. Because why? The public and the society we live in, the white supremacists included, has taught a woman that the only value you have is in your body. And you don't have to go beyond your curves to get what you want. Your mind and enlightenment and understanding and intellect is no longer important. You don't have to have that to survive. They have to have, young men have to have that to survive. But you can get whatever you want as long as you're willing to use your body to get it. So they have acquiesced to what comes easiest to them, to shaking their butt, to twerking, to living out the stereotype. Because to them, in the long run, and the big scheme of things, if the big scheme of things is, in fact, to survive, then they're accomplishing that very well by self-exploitation, not just what the media and what white supremacy has planned for them, but they do it themselves. All too easy to do it to themselves. So my prognosis and my evaluation on our young ladies is dismal. And one other thing I want to address is the fact that the older women who know, the keepers of the flame for the young women, they have dropped the torch. I want to tell you a little story here. I was getting gas not too long ago at the gas station, and a very attractive lady was getting, a young lady was getting gas next to me, and I saw her, peeking over at me or whatever, and she smiled at me. I smiled back or whatever. And, of course, being a man, I took notes that she was very attractive. But her mother began to talk about gas, and she said, well, I don't have the $10. And the mother said, well, why don't you ask him for the money? Now, this is a woman I don't know. I don't know her mother. I don't know her. But her mother basically sent her home and said, well, why don't you ask him? And to my horror, she did. And she said to me, she said, could I have $10? Now, this wasn't a girl who was asking me because it was a need. She was asking me because she felt that because she was looking so attractive that I would just give in to her request just to get an opportunity to talk to her. And that's what's going on. There is no real social movement coming from the inner city, from the young girls, unless they've got some training or a father or a mother who came from out of that vein. But the average person, what we're talking about, the average young lady has no interest in what we're talking about, not even on this show.
Hmm. Wow. And what say you, brother, I don't want to mispronounce his name. What's the brother's name from St. Louis?
Brother Aha.
Brother Aha. Okay. What you say, what is it that you see in the women today, and what is it that you would like to see? Brother Aha, are you there?
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, sir.
We can hear you now.
Okay. What I see is a lost generation, a disrespectful generation. But the disrespect was taught from the ones that they came from. It's not their fault. It was a gap in time has increased. You got grandmama, mama, and daughter all in the same clothes. And grandma ain't older than 40 years old. And they all caught in and kicking it together. And that's a problem. That's a big problem. It's not being taught that the woman is the backbone and the structure of the nation, of the people. Because we all come from her. No matter if you're male or female, we all come from a woman. So the black woman not being schooled correctly from her peers is a big problem, and one of the largest reasons why they move astray. They being the female, the black females in America, not all, because it's some that stand up out here. you know, a more independent mindset, but knowing that it's because of you we all stand strong, and being able to shoulder that proudly. I see my women are as proud as they should be of who they are. They're the birth of the planet. Everybody comes from a black woman. Everybody. I don't care what race you are on this planet. Your mama is a black woman. Period.
Come on, teach.
Even down to the Neanderthal. The one, everybody. And they're not proud of that part because it's not being taught anymore. There was a time period where it was being taught. Like, look who you are. The mother of creation.
Huh.
And once that pride is reinstilled inside of the black woman, that's what I want to see. Because it's that pride that exudes, and that will, it'll transform this whole planet. It really would.
Huh. Yes, sir. Okay, well, what about you, Brother Elder X?
First, I would like to say that is a very, very, very deep question, and thank you, the brothers that spoke prior to me, because I'm in total agreement. I truly do believe at this time I'm 56 years old, and I saw the last of a generation where the woman was respected in the black community. Someone's grandmother was respected within the black community. When we used to have dinners in the black community, Sunday dinners, the family structure has been broken down so much with different factors. But what I see in a black woman today, especially in, I'll say from the ages of 20 and under, which is my main focus for youth, is that I see a generation of our young princesses and our young queens as a generation lost, a generation with no sense of identity, a generation with no sense of morals, no sense of values, no sense of principles. And the sadness about it is I see a generation that's mimicking and imitating something that they can never be. What I say by that is European customs, denying themselves of what they were born with, the wide hips, the thick lips, the almond eyes, the color, the hate of anything dark on their skin, the hate of anything African, and the constant self-hate, and what they do to try to change that, the texture of their hair, the clothes that they wear. What I would like to see is a return back to our original customs and just the natural. For a minute there, we had it going on, and it didn't matter what religion you followed or what practice you believed, but in the 60s and the 70s, it was a thing to walk with an afro and your hair natural, a woman, and be proud of that, to be proud of your hips, to be proud of your skin color, and today it's horrible, but at the same time there's a reassurance and there's like a new rebirth of black identity, but it's done on a quiet tip, because of course the powers that think they be, they're not gonna that's not gonna be on the nightly news. But it is going on, especially I notice amongst black colleges, you know. And also, I'm from New York, but I'm living in Georgia. And in Georgia, it's a big thing amongst the youth to have their hair natural, whether it's in braids, cornrows. But it's not. I don't see the process. I don't see the jerry curls anymore, and that's a good thing. So that's a step ahead. And what I would like to see is, for our future, I would like to see us to be educated, not just a black woman, but also the our whole black nation to be educated, to spread the knowledge. And I like what was said about returning back to the other question about the drum, about being away from our rhythm. This is so true, and that's what's going on with the sisters now. You know, at my age, when I grew up, when I was 12 years old, and I'll end it with this, when I was 12 years old, I thought that if I kissed a girl, she would get pregnant. Now, there's kindergarten kids that are in kindergarten that are actually having sex within our community, that are acknowledgeable about sex. And it's just ridiculous. So it's a sad state, but I still am hopeful and faithful, and I think that each one of us, it starts in the home and it starts with the individual. So we have to definitely reach our young.
Wow. Kindergartners having sex, that is, you know what, that is so far beyond me. I'm not going to even tap into that. But this is what I want to get into, because you all being men, certainly women oftentimes dress or take on a demeanor that they believe will attract a man. And for this behavior to continue, evidently there are some men that are gravitating to the half-dressed woman, the overly mm-hmm. made-up woman, the woman with the mm-hmm. weave, the woman with the booty shorts on, the woman with a booty on her chest, you know, whatever, partially clad, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word. There are men who are gravitating towards that. Now, in our teachings, as being a member of the Nation of Islam and being a Muslim, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that there is no such thing as a no good woman. A no good woman is made no good by a no good man. And what he means by that is that men have to take the position of being not rulers in a sense of domination, but in a sense of responsibility and caretaking of the woman, in the maintenance of a woman, not just in a financial sense, but in the maintenance of her behavior when she exposes herself. Because if you lose a man, you lose a life. But when you lose a woman, you lose a nation, because she is the reproducers of you. So what can you do as young men in the community to encourage other young men to not gravitate towards such women? Because I promise you, actual fact, hands down, if every man required a woman to dress like a nun, you will see everybody walking down the street looking like the flying nun. Because if that's what men were attracted to, but we know that's not the case, and we know that that's why most women are walking around here half naked. So how do we encourage our men to desire a righteous and virtuous woman? Can I start with you, Kurt?
In order to get our men to desire a virtuous woman, you have to create a desire in the men of to want a social conscience. I mean, that is the issue. I mean, you got brothers out there like the elder, you know, and you got him working, his other brother working. Everybody is trying to reach a lot of different brothers, you know, and whatever medium that God has placed them. But Queen, the issue is simply this. You can't get people interested in nation building who don't even know that we're supposed to be building a nation. You know, you can't get them interested in looking for that which they want for themselves. So, I mean, if you're saying looking for having men to, you know, want to desire a conscious sister or a sister, you know, he has to first desire that for himself. You know, he has to first clear up his own messes. He has to first enlighten himself and bring himself up to par.
or to desire that. We all desire people based on what stage we are in our own lives. So, I mean, take for instance, there would be no way I would be interested in a woman who's not interested in being enlightened. If you're going to be around me, you're going to have to take this knowledge. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Why? Because there's no way we can exist in the same space if we're not of one accord, on the same wavelength. One or two things that happen, the power, the passion, and the anointing within my life will be too bright for you. It'll drive you away from me. And if you are not there yet and you don't desire what I want out of life, far as consciousness in yourself, you're going to run me away because your darkness is going to be too bright. You understand? So to get brothers to wanting, to get brothers and queens to wanting good sisters and sisters, Christ sisters, you can't want that which you don't have not, you know, obtained for yourself. You have no attraction to it. You know, let me package it in this way before our audience, listening audience. A lot of people say, well, God is a cruel God. Why would he send us people to hell if in fact, he so-called loves all of us? How can you say you love us and yet condemn us to hell? Well, that's a simple answer. If you take people who desire debauchery and decadence and wickedness, and you say, well, we're going to take you all and go to heaven no matter what you did, you wouldn't, heaven would be hell for you. So, you know, you'd have to first change their makeup, their spiritual makeup, in order for them to be able to enjoy heaven. It's the same way with women and men. In order for them to enjoy this conscious movement, or to enjoy this knowledge that we're giving them, or to enjoy nation building, or to want it, or to want it in somebody else, they first must themselves accomplish that which is themselves that they desire to see in others. Queen, there is no way a woman can, there's another example, can say, well, I won't marry a man unless he is college educated, well accomplished, has a car, has a house, he's established. And she's living at home with her mother. Are you serious? You cannot expect from other people that which you have not accomplished yourself.
Huh. Yes, sir. Okay. Brother Aha.
Yes, ma'am.
So what can we do to encourage the brothers to desire your virtuous woman?
That's a good question. Because what's being taught, we have to take away what's being taught to them. Take the non-virtuous woman out of the picture. We got to take the lustful magazines, the lustful videos, the lustful movies, the tools that are used that's guiding our people right now. We don't control. 98% of our people are guided by Hollywood, television, magazines, the entertainment industry. We once controlled the industry, and our people vibe together. We had on clothes. I'm from the generation that the clothes came off, the 70s babies.
And I
remember the change. You know, you had good times where you had on clothes. The big thing was when family wanted to go dancing. But you had on clothes. Then I remember the clothes coming off with the WB network. You know,
yes, sir.
We were targeted. So we have to take that over again. I remember when, and hip hop in the very beginning, you had stuff on. TLC might have been over baggy, but they had on clothes.
Yes, sir.
You know, it's a marketing tool that we must recapture. We must make that a prize thing, a coveted thing. When a male looks at the female, and she's in a virtuous manner, and it's still beautiful, because a woman can be beautiful right from head to toe, with cheeks showing or her showing. It does, but her eyes, when you look into her face, because everything else is covered. You don't have to show yourself especially when you can bring out your mouth words of wisdom. Most men sit at the feet of women that speak wisdom.
Huh. Wow. Okay, and Brother Wayne?
What?
Brother Elder?
Yes, what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that you quoted is so true. It's right on point. If the black nation and the black men have a decadent, immoral sense of being and are not built spiritually and not in tune with the God within them, then what they're going to worship in the woman is not a woman of virtue, not a godlike woman. They're going to worship and chase a woman of immoral character and conduct and lack of God within them, that's in them but not manifested. So everything that we're talking about ties in, and it was said prior to me so eloquently by the brother, you know, with the propaganda in the media, it goes back to that. And without knowledge itself, this is what happens. We live as the Romans did, because that's where our society is in America, in the United States of America as a whole. It's like we're living in a paganistic society of immoral conduct. And so the woman, the black woman, that's why we see them in the condition they are in now. You know, it's so important. It's so very, very, very important to build the spiritual man. If you address the spiritual man first, then anything else will fall apart. If you address the man first, the woman will fall right underline the maintenance of her spiritualness, her godly-like manner, her godly-like attitude. So, you know, if you want to cut off, if you want to kill something, you don't cut off the tail, you cut off the head. So the men have to lead. Us as black men, we have to lead the way. You know, I like what Kurt said about, you know, each one of us doing our part, and that's the importance of it. Because it's just like if you flick a pebble into a pond, it has all these waves, all these circles, and that's what will happen. You know, if we teach our youth this way to be, and more so to manifest it in our lives, that's one thing that, and I just want to say this, I remember as a teenager, the powerful impact that the Nation of Islam had on 116th Street in the mosque, in Harlem during that era, because for the first time, an African American can see a black man and a black woman and respect them. The impact was so powerful, and I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. Here's a black man walking with dignity, with moral character, who has some kind of control of his emotions, who's not drugged out, who's respecting all society, respecting his own people. You know, people that did not agree with the Nation of Islam, whether they disagreed or not, one thing that we all had in common that didn't follow that, we said, you know what? You've got to respect them. You have to respect them. Because here, for the first time in the history of the United States of America, was black people standing strong, living strong, unified. Black women that, you know, you wouldn't mess with them. You wouldn't talk, even to this day, you wouldn't talk. If you see a black Muslim woman from the Nation of Islam across the United States of America, and you recognize her by the wardrobe that she's wearing, you wouldn't disrespect her, because you know you would have the wrath of the nation upon you. And the way she carried herself, you couldn't talk. You couldn't say, like, hey, baby, what's going on, boo? And that's how important it is for the way that a woman looks, the way she carries herself, and the way she dresses. You know, in every single book, and I like what was said, study all books, because spiritual principles have no conflict. In all the books, it talks about the virtue of a woman and how she shouldn't be exposed in that manner. So what a beautiful question. Very deep.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to yield back to the distinguished gentleman from St. Louis, Brother Kareem. You have questions for our panelists?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, the subject, I want to stay right on the subject that you were just on. Again, we are still talking about poetry in motion. And honestly, let me say this, that a woman, a virtuous woman, is indeed poetry in motion, because as the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad has taught us, that the only heaven that we are going to find is in the black woman. That's the heaven right there. However, you're not going to get heaven out of hell. So we have to alleviate that problem. And in order to preface my question, I want to share something out of the book Message to the Black Man, entitled, the section entitled Original Man. I'm going to read a very short passage from it, which is one of the most controversial passages, by the way. And it's entitled Protect and Elevate Your Woman. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad states this: Allah himself has said that we cannot return to our land until we have a thorough knowledge of our own selves. This first step is the control and protection of our own women. There is no nation on earth that has less respect for and as little control of their woman as we so-called Negroes here in America. Even animals and beasts, the fowls of the air, have more love and respect for their females than have the so-called Negroes of America. And with that being said, like I said, the most controversial thing about that is that word control. See, nobody has a problem with us protecting and respecting the woman. But when you talk about that word control, and this is a thing with our motif of poetry in motion, that rhythm, having that natural rhythm that we have to move forward, I want to address my question first to Brother Aha. When it says control, in your view, in keeping with that rhythm, what does it mean?
The assistance of us and our female in the situations that we put ourselves in.
Mm-hmm.
In what we learn, in what we eat, in how we dress. We control that situation because we're both there standing together. That's how I see it.
Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. And Elder X, if you would answer that same question, please.
The word control, according to the dictionary, and breaking it down to this, like, almost low, like, denominator, one is to exercise restraint or direction over, dominate, command, or to hold in check, to curb, to test or verify by a parallel experiment or other standard of comparison. Control with compassion, control with empathy, control with love is a whole different connotation from control as in a dictatorship. So I'm looking at the word control as a positive aspect with love, empathy, and compassion, because it goes back to the man is the head. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad spoke so eloquently in what you had quoted. And I believe that is truly the real answer to the question that our sister put forth to us all. We must get in tune with our drum, our rhythm, the God that's in us, because in every book it says that we are made in the image of the Creator, and we are gods within ourselves because God is within us all. Once we get in contact with that and let Him rule us, the men, and put Him first, then it'll just fall in line like dominoes. Because if we're living that righteous life, and the woman, our mate, our part, our other half, is with us, she will fall into tune. She will fall into line. So it won't be a thing like she will feel as if, you know, it's a bad thing, because she will know the position that she has to her man, the head of the family.
Yes, sir. All praises due to Allah. And Brother Kirk, same question to you.
All right. I just stepped away for a second. Could you give me a question again, please, sir?
Yes, sir. Well, as I said, what I read from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he talked about the fact that, and it's called protect and elevate your woman. And the thing, one of the things is that we're taught that we have to protect and respect the woman. However, let me say it like this. See, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad also taught us. He said that anything that you cannot control, you cannot protect. For example, our children. I'll use children as an example. If I have a child and I kill the child, say I live on a thoroughfare, in other words, where there's constantly traffic going up and down the street. We're gonna make it a dangerous situation. All right. And I have repeatedly told the child, don't go out into the street. Now, if I don't have any control over that child, if there's no way for me to control that child, how can I protect that child from being killed? Now, I'm using that as an example. So, again, when we use this word control, when he uses the word control, it's often misconceived. And so what I'm asking you is how do we exercise that control so that we can protect and elevate our woman based on what we were talking about? As Queen Aziza said, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, there are no good women. All no good women were made that way by no good man. So what is it that we as men have to do, all right, to be able to exercise that control so that we can protect and elevate our woman, so that we are in the same mode, we're moving as poetry in motion, we're moving in the same rhythm so that we can get ourselves up out of this condition that we are in?
Well, first let me say I am not in agreement at all with Brother Elijah Muhammad about all women are made bad by no good by no good men at all. We're all given free will and the power to make our own decisions on what forces that we decide to follow, whether they be evil or good. And I am responsible for my actions, even as it relates to the reaction that I choose based on what someone done to me. So if I have a woman who cheats on me, and I say, well, you know, I've been cheated on so much, I'm just going to become a cheater. That doesn't work. I made a conscious decision. My honesty and my goodness and my salvation is my own, irregardless to what has happened to me. Me coming out of the Christian vein, Jesus taught that we do not return evil for evil. And he taught that because if you had everybody returning evil for evil, you come into a situation to where everybody justifying their own evil. Everybody doing evil and saying, oh, well, I'm like this because of the guy I met last week, without taking any responsibility for their own actions. It's like I would tell my sisters, well, you know, these guys I'm meeting, and they're doing such and such and such and such and such. And I would say to her, well, what are you doing? Well, what do you mean? I'm just running into these guys. I said, no, the guys are not the problem. I said, you are. She said, what do you mean? I said, because you're choosing them. I said that young man with those big rims of his past hanging off his butt with that criminal record, grab you by the hair like a caveman, throw you into the car and strap you in and say, you must go with me. Of course he didn't do that. You'd be in jail. You chose. It's an old saying that when we ask the devil, why did you do this to me? And the devil said, I didn't do anything to you. I called your name and you answered. So you must understand that women must take responsibilities for their own choices in this life, and not because some no good man has done it. Now, as it speaks to control, there is no reason to have to control anything when things are in proper context. When you have the man as the head and leading factor in the family, the strong man who's the protector and also the provider and also the teacher, okay? We have a passage in the Bible in the Christian vein. The Bible says, women, obey your husband as if he was God himself, if he was Lord. For he is your Lord upon the earth. You go to Corinthians chapter 11 where it says that a man was not made for woman, but woman was made for man. And for the angels say, shall she be subject unto man in all things? For she shall not exercise authority over nothing. So when you understand that was in a chauvinist God, that's the devil's kind of thinking. So, well, you know, why did God do that? Well, if God is the creator, he was the maker, and he made woman after man, then don't you think he knew his own creation? And he knew that it would be better, as he put it, the woman being a weaker vessel, that she should have authority over her, that him being the leader, he should need to be in that position for a particular reason. I'm also not of the idea, like the eloquent speaking brother who spoke before me was saying that, you know, of course we all come from a woman, but it is not the woman who is the seed bearer. It is the man. The man is the seed giver, the life giver. The woman is the incubator. She is where she incubates the seed. That's why all children in the Bible were given their father's last name, because all children belong to the man. They don't belong to one. But when you live in a corrupt society and you're dealing with people who have built all their knowledge on social ideologies and who don't have any real intelligence and they don't have any real knowledge, only what, you know, and that's not, I'm not talking in reference to this panel. I'm talking about people, the average people in the world. They haven't researched it, nor do they have insight, nor do they have discernment, none of those things. They go with what sounds good, the most popular thing, the political correct kind of thing. They say things that sound good, but place them, those same ideologies they speak of, place them under the hot net, in the spotlight, with real understanders of knowledge and real men of philosophy and real intelligent men, and those ideologies will crumble. So I say in closing that if you don't have to control that which is already in line, know what is placed already. Children, when children know that they are children and they don't run anything in the household, they do what they're told. When the wife understands that, hey, I am your husband, and though you may not like my decision or not, you still, as my woman, you support my decision. And as long as my decision does not put you or the children in any kind of harm. My mother would do that often. My mother would say, well, I want to do such and such. And my father would listen to her, and she would explain her reason why. And my father would say, well, I don't think that's a route that we should take. At this particular moment, based on our finances, we've got three or four kids in college. We've got this. You know, we'll go ahead and just stay on this path until we clear out some other things off my plate. Even though my mother may want to protest, my mother would acquiesce and say, "That's your decision. That's fine." Because why? You cannot have two leaders in a household. It cannot work. There's a way that there's a reason why our corporations operate off the pyramid scheme. There's a reason why you only have one CEO, one or the FCO, one vice president. Because you can't have all those people with the same amount of power. Nothing would get done. But when you take that kind of social setup and you distort it, and you had everybody across the board equal power, you get nothing but chaos. That's why relationships right now in disarray. I've got friends who met women brothers who tried to come in. And even though the children were receptive, they loved his disciplinary style. They loved him. She was the one protesting. Don't nobody do this to my kids but me. And don't nobody tell my kids this and this. And don't nobody. He said, well, you didn't say that when I was paying lights for your kids to read under. And you didn't say that when I was putting food in the refrigerator for your children to eat. And you didn't say that when I was paying the mortgage on your house for your children to live in. Because when he moved, well, she already had that house. He left his to be with her and ran his out. And you didn't say that when I repaired the car to get them around. See, so that's what we got to look at. You have to control that. You don't have to control anything when everybody knows their respective place. I yield the rest of my time.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, thank you for your insights, bro, on that. And I would like to say this because we're down to 9:46 and coming down to the end of the program. And here's the thing. Now, here's my question, and I appreciate everything you said. And I want to expound a little bit more on what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said about that. Now, we know that overall, this world that we live in is not a matriarchal society, but a patriarchal society, meaning one that is run by men. We also know that it tells us that this world, that anybody that doesn't know it, they should know it, that the world that we live in today is a world run by Satan. And Satan, by the evidence we have, is a man because he's called the man of sin, the man of perdition. So when the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad says that there are no good women, except they be made no good by a no good man, he's talking about just that. I mean, the society has set up and controlled by quote-unquote men. So when you have these systems in place, the women come under that. And as Queen Aziza was mentioning earlier, she said earlier, if we as men take our correct place, yes, the woman has no choice but to come into order. Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad also taught us that God's first creation was himself. He created himself out of triple darkness because there was nothing in the universe save him. Now, contrary to what we have been given, he also taught us that God's first creation after himself was the woman because he is, quote unquote, the original man, because after he created himself in triple darkness, then he wanted to reproduce himself. However, he couldn't reproduce himself alone. So he looked into himself and saw a second self, which is the woman. He brought her out of himself, and then he was able to reproduce himself into us, many men and women. Now, along those lines, I just want to ask, I'm just going to share this, and it's a question I'm going to ask, it's really rhetorical. See, when they give us the story of Adam and Eve in the Bible, now, I'm going to paraphrase, I'm not going to read it, but I'm going to paraphrase, and for those who know the Bible, they'll know I'm telling the truth. Those who don't, go and read it in Genesis. It says that God created man of the dust of the ground and breathed into him the breath of life. Then God decided that it wasn't good for man to be alone, so then he created the woman as a helpmeet. M-E-E-T, helpmeet, to help him meet his obligation to God, which the instructions Adam was given
was to groom or, you know, well, groom the garden, keep the garden in order, keep everything straight. Now, according to the story, Adam is gone. Now, we don't know where Adam went to. We don't know what business he was taking care of. But while Adam is gone, they both have been given the same instruction, and Adam is the head, that they may eat of every tree in the garden except the tree in the midst of the garden, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for in that day they will surely die. This is what they're told. And it says that Satan came along, and pretty much he said he whispered to the woman. He made a suggestion. Actually, he used the truth. He asked her questions. He asked her, he said, did God say that you cannot eat of every tree in the garden? And she responded, yes, because that's what God said. She said, yes, but every tree but that one that's in the midst, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. She said, oh, well, you won't surely die. He said that he told you that because he knows that when you eat of that tree, that you will become as God, knowing good and evil, which is lies mixed with truth. Now, she took the fruit. She ate the fruit. Now, if Adam is on his job, if Adam is in his right mind, then when he comes back and sees that she's deviated, then the first thing he will do is correct her for her deviation. And he'll stand on that correction, and if she doesn't want to be corrected, then he'll leave her be, because just as God gave Adam Eve, he would give his true servant another comfort. However, Adam goes right on and does what he wants to do, because evidently it was in his heart to do otherwise. He couldn't have been pulled off his ding, off his track. And the reason I say that is because notice what Adam says when God confronts him with his own deviation. Does he take credit for it? Does he stand up and take his own weight, as we say? No. The first thing he says to God is, the woman you gave me is the one that caused me to fall. So he's going to put the blame on God. So I'm saying that to say that, see, some of the things that we are given, we have to, as it even tells us, to take it with a grain of salt. We have to have an understanding of the fact that if we are men, indeed men, meaning if we are the rulers, then if we are in line, yes, the woman will fall in line, but she's not to simply obey us simply because, quote unquote, we the man in words. We have to be the man indeed. And as my sister said, it ain't just about us bringing home the money, putting a roof over the head, but we actually have to be a walking, talking, living example of God in the house, in the flesh. Then we won't have that issue. The reason I brought up the thing about the control is because we were talking about poetry in motion, and we were talking about the poetry, and indeed, a man and a woman moving in God's will, in God's way, in the rhythm that God has set, yes, that we hear by the beat of the drum, that God has set in the universe and has set in our hearts, which brings us into harmony. That is the true poetry. All the words that we use and share, they reflect that. We are living in a time now, as we're talking about, children in kindergarten having sex. I mean, this whole society and system is that of Satan. And the only way that we are going to come out of this system, the only way that we are going to rise and be together, is that we have to have first a thorough knowledge of ourselves. We have to have a thorough knowledge of who God really is. And we have to have a thorough knowledge of our enemy, Satan, if you will, and the tricks that he uses. Because even as it says in the Holy Quran, that God and Satan will have a conversation one day. And Satan says to God, after God, quote unquote, according to Satan, had disappointed him, Satan said to God, then I will come at them in your straight way, from before them and from behind them, from their left and from their right, from above and from below. And the straight way, the straight path of God, as we know it today, would be called religion, or these different philosophies. That means that if we are not in tune, in rhythm ourselves, if we are not moving in that poetry, then even with the words, we can get off because we're going to misinterpret the word. And so I think I've run my mouth enough. Queen Aziza, do you have anything that you would like to add?
No, sir, not at this time, but I do want to take the time, since we're about 4 minutes out, to thank the panelists and give them one last opportunity to share anything that's on their hearts with us. So I'm going to start with Brother Aha. Brother Aha, any last words?
Yes, real
or
quick.
Or any poem you want to share with us right now?
Last words, real quick. It's one thing we got away from that has to be realized. When this was a maternal society that ran this planet, the black man ran the planet. Since it's been a paternal society, the white man runs the planet. We ain't on rhythm. So we got it backwards. White supremacy was pushed by putting the masculine energy out there as head. That's a homosexual society. Man and man is everything they do in that society. They made the woman look as the worst thing. They made the woman look bad in that society. Put it like that. They kicked her out. Everything's blamed on the female. You go back and research in our story, we come from a maternal society. And that's when we ran the planet. The Candice, that's the royal
family. The mailbox
bloodline
is full and cannot accept any messages at this.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You see, when we controlled our planet, when the human being had the planet and not mankind, it was a maternal society. The Gregorian European society has pushed a paternal society upon us, and we don't have our planet. We're out of rhythm. That's why we're out of rhythm. Researchable
fact. Yes, sir. Okay, and Kurt?
Well, I take issue and disagree with my esteemed brother, I think different panel members are coming from different influences, and I clearly hear from the brother what he's saying, but what he's saying borders on the metaphysical. Not just patriarchal, matriarchal society. When you go to talking about the planet, the earth, and being women being the head of those things. Being a history major and an avid researcher. I do understand that there are certain people who see the woman to be all to end all, and as the woman being the answer to all our woes, but I don't agree. I don't agree that the woman is to be demonized at all either. I think that the woman, when properly exercising her position, as well as the man's properly exercising his position, we are a force to be reckoned with. And we must be careful to stay away from rhetoric and to stay away from the feel-good messages that are just the same old drum beat. I myself don't, subscribe to a lot of the feel-good messages that a lot of people propagate because they don't get to the crux of the matter. They make it sound good. It feels good, and it sounds good to be uplifting women. I hear you. I get it, but it doesn't get us to the meat and potatoes of the issue. And if we make it a purely masculine, feminine type of thing, then that segues into a whole different conversation. What we must stay with is what we began, and that's nation building and the rhythm and poetry and those things. Because that's where we will find the answers to these questions that we're asking. But I think we must stay away from that. I think women must do what's natural. Does it feel natural for you to lead the world as a woman?
Brother, I never said the woman led the world. The woman put the mirror up in the world. The woman put the man at the head of the house.
I'm not referring. Let me clear something. I'm not referring to anything you're saying. I very seldom refer directly to anything a brother says. I'm talking about as in a spiritual sense. Does it feel natural for a woman to lead the world? Does it feel natural for a brother to allow a woman to run the society and run the household? If those were natural positions, you wouldn't have any groups that were created from Illuminism, just like feminism was. Those are creative movements. That's why the majority of feminists, not all of them, who wouldn't understand what feminism is. It was for the destruction of the family unit. It was also headed by lesbians. Most of the women who were starting the feminist movement were themselves Illuminists and lesbian. So out of that vein, if you go back and look at their old plaques, if you go back and look at their old symbols, look at their old flags, it's purely Illuminist, occult in nature. Madame Blavatsky, famed and known, well-known occultist, said that feminism was a movement of Illuminism and Freemasonry. So what we're dealing with here is if you're gonna delve into those particular issues, then you got to be prepared to a whole different level and to a whole different place. And you know, this thing could go on all night when you get into that level. But I want to say I've learned a lot from this discussion. I've been enjoying it immensely. I appreciate Queen and your other esteemed guests for having me on. And I don't think let the listeners take their own point, their own perils. I don't think there's one voice is right or one voice is wrong. I think that for those audience who received what I've had to say, along with what Brother Elder had to say and the other brother, take what you need to take out of it. But as long as you're doing something out there for nation building, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Brother Kerr.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Brother Baha? I'm sorry. Aha.
Yes.
See, that's why I didn't want to say nothing. I don't want to get it wrong.
Yes.
Your closing remarks, sir.
People get it wrong all day, every day. I get used to it. It's simple. It's like that moment everybody has. Aha. That's how I tell people to remember.
Aha. Okay, now I can say aha.
It's aha. Aha.
That's okay.
Yes, ma'am.
So you have any closing remarks for us?
Closing remarks. It's not a rebuttal. It's not an argument. It's factual. I deal off facts. Everything, even the poetry in motion, I come strictly off facts. The fact is, we don't have our planet because we're off rip.
Yes,
you
sir.
Know, we need to get back in tune with how nature creates and not how the books that were pushed upon us by our slave masters have created our mindset. Nature comes from a feminine to a masculine principle. It's androgynous as energy, but it comes from a feminine to masculine principle. A woman can have a child, asexual reproduction, and it'll be a female child. Man just adds one chromosome, Y. A Y is a broken X. woman has XX chromosome, proven fact. Asexual reproduction happens in nature. It's not the glorification and worship of the female. It's the fact that we need to realign ourselves. In our ancient societies, you came from your mother. Your mother put you on the throne.
Yes, sir.
A man
okay.
can't have a child. Period. A man
That's
can't
right.
have a child. A man can't carry. Point blank. The feminine principle
okay.
comes first. That's science.
Yes, sir.
And it's factual. Now, how we all live as one and build a nation is to realize that, stop putting our women down and put them back up where they need to be so they can pull us up. We defend them all as well. But we got they have to pull us up to defend. It's through that doorway that they open for us because we come out of them. Men ain't having babies. No man on this planet can say he carried a child and had one. You can only add a Y chromosome. That's it.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, that's the end of our show. I want to thank, we lost Brother Wayne somewhere. I tried to call him back, but I guess his phone may have died or something. But we want to extend a thank you to him and a thank you to Brother Kurt McMasters. I love your concepts, and I hope that you will join us again. And Brother Aha, I hope that you will come back and join us again and join us next Saturday. Today, as we're having a grown folks theme. We're having music to love by. So we're going to pull out some of the old school music from back in the day. We're going to choose some of the best love songs ever made by anybody, and hopefully along the way we can encourage some courtships and some marriages or something in the process. And join us for Sunday for No Romance Without Finance, with hosted by Brother Vernon. And on Monday, Brother Kareem is coming back with Conscious Black Nation. I think he said it's called Bursting Asunder. I can't wait to hear what that's about. And then on Tuesday, we're having a rebroadcast because it's our National Believers Meeting. We're rebroadcasting the History of the Nation of Islam with Brother Akbar, hosted by Brother Jihad. On Wednesday, DJ Black Caesar and friends will be back with our hip-hop comedy show. On Thursday, I will be back with part three of Defending Farrakhan. And on Friday, we will have study group put on the new man, hosted by Student Minister James Muhammad out of Tampa, Florida. And next Saturday, we'll be right back here with Young, Gifted, and Black, Music to Love By. So thank all of you for listening. All of you who could not get in the chat room, I do so apologize. I will let Blog Talk know that you were not able to access the chat room, but thank you for inboxing me and letting me know. Thank you, Brother Kareem, so much. I love you dearly. I can't express it enough for always having my back. I was a little under the weather tonight, but my brother has always been right there whenever I need him. So know that it does not go unnoticed. I truly, truly love you and appreciate you so very much. And thank you all for joining us. So we leave you as we came. In peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.